Listen up, we've got one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations today only up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously, please, at marketplace.org/givetech. You think you won't fall for a scam until you do. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. On the show today, we're talking about financial scams, and we're passing the mic to victims to tell their own stories. Up first, Shannon in Minnesota, who asked us not to use her last name to protect her identity. She was at work on a Tuesday last fall when she got a call from a person claiming to be a local sheriff's deputy.
He says that I was a expert witness for a federal court case that happened the day before, and I did not show up. You know, I had a subpoena order to come as the expert witness, and I was a no-show, which is a federal felony. And he mentioned the judge. So I look up the judge. Sure enough, that is the federal judge for that county. Like, everything's following suit as I'm looking it up. And so I'm like, okay, this is the county sheriff's office phone number. This is the judge. This is the deputy sheriff. This is real. They said, at this point, you know, you do have these federal felonies out, and I can get off the phone at this point and seek legal counsel. And at that point, they will, I will be immediately incarcerated, and they will, they'll have to seek legal counsel with my lawyer and no longer me, or I can have these bail bonds. At that point, the bonds were $50,000. Also there was a gag order and then a must maintain contact with them at all times order. So I had to maintain contact with them the whole time.
And that is just the beginning. The rest includes threats of jail time, lies about handwriting tests, and another $30,000 so-called bond payment. In the end, Shannon lost more than $80,000 to this scheme. So how did the scammers pull it off? And how can we protect ourselves in the future? To understand how these kinds of scams work, I spoke to Selena Larson, a threat researcher at Proofpoint.
So the scammers in this case pretended to be from a government representative, and they definitely use scare tactics to try and convince her to give them money. These are characteristic hallmarks, pretending to be someone in authority, saying that there are these bad things that will happen if you don't listen to them. Scammers will often use social engineering to evoke strong emotions in people that lead to these sort of illogical responses. This is because they're actually hijacking our brains. So the scientific term for this is called amygdala hijacking, where the emotional part of our brains really override the rational and logical part. So scaring Shannon and threatening her with legal action, imprisonment, the loss of her livelihood would really cause severe stress. And when we're stressed out, we often make bad decisions.
Well, let's talk about the technology and information scammers have access to for a minute. Shannon said that she Googled the number that appeared on her phone from what turned out to be a scammer. How are fraudsters able to spoof phone numbers or identities of public officials?
Yeah, unfortunately, phone number spoofing is a common technique that's used by scammers. Basically, it makes it look like the call is coming from a government agency, someone in your same area code, a specific individual that they know the phone number of. There are tools such as voice over IP or mobile provider apps that let people designate what phone number they want to actually appear on a caller ID. So the FCC and other, you know, U.S. government organizations have put out advisories essentially about this technique that's unfortunately common when we're talking about phone scams. And scammers often research both the target and the people that they're impersonating to sort of create scripts that would be more effective to the individual. So not only are they spoofing the phone number, but they also have information and a conversation that might lend additional authenticity to whoever they're pretending to be.
Let's return to Shannon's story for a couple of minutes. What we heard from her earlier is just the beginning of her story, as I mentioned. Let's bring her back to tell us how her story ended.
The next morning, the scammers call. They said, "We are so sorry to tell you this, but there is a federal marshal who came. And with that federal marshal, we have come to an agreement that there is one more bond that needs to be rectified for you to come in so that we don't have any more trouble on the federal government and with these federal felonies. And I'm like, I am like completely wiped out. Like I can't, there's no way. And I was just, you know, obviously I didn't sleep the whole night, exhausted, could barely eat. And at one point my husband just takes the phone and he just starts going livid. And all of a sudden it was like Rumpelstiltskin, and behind these like AI voices that sounded like people from here, these voices from across the world come on. And they start mocking us, laughing at us, saying how they got $80,000 from us, haha, and just make a mess of us. And they don't get off the phone until we hang up.
So this is just a piece of Shannon's entire experience. In her interview with us, she said the scammers overwhelmed her with information and legal terminology. They told her that she would get her bond money back once the subpoena issue was resolved. And crucially, they instructed her to send her payments through a crypto kiosk at the grocery store, which she was told would be received by the U.S. Department of Treasury. So with all of that in mind, you know, having heard these pieces of her story, what are some of the red flags that you notice that we can learn from?
So starting off, pretending to be someone with authority, especially the government, and using scare tactics to convince people that they are authentic. Scammers will say things like, don't tell anyone and stay on the line with me to maintain these sort of high levels of stress and isolate the victim so that they will be more likely to make bad decisions. Directing her to a cryptocurrency kiosk is a huge red flag. I think that that's something that a lot of times you see with these scams. And of course, that would never happen with legitimate government organizations. She also mentioned, you know, they were talking about a lot of legalese and saying information and just using seemingly legitimate pieces of information in government speak to try and further convince her of this lie. Again, that's a very common technique, you know, overwhelming someone with information that is hard for them to immediately fact check without doing a significant amount of research. And that's why they want to keep you on the line. That's why they want to say, you know, you have to keep talking to us. You can't tell anyone that this is happening to you. And because if you have, you know, the time to sort of think about something and research it yourself or talk to her husband, there's, you know, someone else can say, hey, maybe this isn't correct. Let's talk about this. Let's think through this. So it's definitely a part of the scammer's toolbox.
And Shannon says she thinks the scammers may have been using AI-generated voices. We can't know for sure if that was true in her case, but is that something that scammers are using a lot these days as AI tools become more accessible?
Yeah, so there are voice modification tools that are broadly available right now for people to choose what to make their voice sound like. They might be used in things like reading scripts for advertising or videos or, you know, even multiplayer video games, people kind of trolling each other with fake voices. But scammers use this technology too to pretend to be someone else. Some of these tools say that they are AI-based, and some of them can imitate people like celebrities or politicians or really anyone that has enough training data, podcast hosts, for example.
That's reassuring.
You know, it does come down to whether there's enough audio available of a person to be able to sort of effectively clone their voice for a prolonged conversation. And it's also, you know, it's worth noting that AI can copy voices pretty convincingly now, but the scam itself will still be the same. So the red flags will still be there. That weird instructions like, you know, send your cryptocurrency to the treasury via this kiosk. It should still be a red flag, regardless if you're talking to, you know, AI politician or, you know, a random stranger.
So in a sentence or two, what do you want people to know about these kinds of financial scams?
So they are insidious and can really impact anyone, especially from if you're talking about like the phone scams. It's always best to hang up the phone and call the number that's listed on the government agency or, you know, the sheriff's department or the court information, really whoever is being spoofed. So even if it looks legitimate, you want to hang up and call that number that belongs to the legitimate authority or organization and then contact them from there. If it is legitimate, then there will be a conversation and you can ensure that you're talking to the right person.
We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work. while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with Selena Larson, threat researcher at Proofpoint. We actually heard from several people wanting to share their scam stories for this episode. Let's take a listen to Haley from California. Haley was on her third day at a new job, and she was out on a run before work when she got an email from the president of her new company.
So he says, I'm in a meeting with a longtime client of mine, and I really want to show them our appreciation. Can you go to the store and get a gift card for me? I work in crisis PR, so it's not out of the ordinary for me to do tasks kind of early in the morning or late at night. And so I literally ran to the store because I was already running. And he said, can you take a picture of the different gift cards that are there and I'll see which one I want to do. He's like, okay, great. Let's do Apple for $500. And then he said, just send a picture of your receipt and we'll reimburse you. So I swiftly go to check out and he says, okay, just like scratch off the back and take a picture of the number. And so I do that. And the moment I sent the picture of the back of the card, I realized what I was doing. I was like, what have I done? And the entire scam took place within the span of 15 minutes.
I've heard from a colleague where I work that they've heard from our company's CEO in a very similar scheme. Mm-hmm. What stands out to you?
Yeah, so this social engineering technique really pairs urgency with this desire to do good work or support and respond to positions of people in authority. Of course, with Haley, she just got the job. She wants to make sure that she's responding very quickly and showing that she's a good employee. And that's, you know, understandable that that would be her reaction to something like that. I also want to point out here, too, that it's interesting to me that she was on a run when she got this. Because oftentimes we'll receive these types of emails at times of day where we might not be on 100% guard. With these scams in particular, the gift card scams, the financial payoff is usually significantly less than what we heard with Shannon, for example. And it takes less time on behalf of the scammer and they can kind of cycle through more people. And the threat actors who are conducting these types of scams might also be involved in things like Shannon's story or ransomware or other types of extortion, which can lead to very serious financial as well as mental health consequences.
Mm-hmm. And people who have been victims of scams so often feel really ashamed. Maybe they never tell anyone. They don't tell family or friends what happened because they're scared of being judged. How do you think victims should react in the aftermath of a scam?
Well, first of all, I do have to give tremendous kudos to Shannon and Haley for sharing their stories. I think it takes a tremendous amount of courage to not only admit that this happened to you, but to talk about it in a public setting. Because the shame is there. I mean, I've talked to many, many people who have been scammed, and they feel the same way a victim of a real crime would. However, in this case, they feel like it's their fault. And I think part of that is because, you know, the way that people react to it is like, oh, well, you should have known better. And that's the wrong reaction. Anyone can fall for social engineering if it's tailored to them. It's just a matter of, you know, being presented with it at the right time, with the right potential consequences, with the correct convincing conversation. And I think that, you know, feeling bad and feeling ashamed is very, very common. And I don't fault anyone for feeling that way. But I really encourage people to at least report it to the authorities. And I also encourage people to talk about it with friends and family. Because the more that we talk about this, the more we can sort of reduce the stigma of being a victim of a cybercrime and make it okay to talk about. And the more people are aware of it, the less that this will happen. And we can actually prevent future people from experiencing similar crimes.
That was Selena Larson at Proofpoint. Earlier this year, an essay in New York Magazine's The Cut went viral online when financial advice columnist Charlotte Coles detailed how she herself fell victim to a financial scam and lost $50,000. In a lot of ways, her story is similar to Shannon's. Coles writes that she got a call one morning, which her phone identified as being from Amazon. The fake Amazon worker, along with men posing as agents from the Federal Trade Commission and the CIA, spun a story of identity theft, telling Coles her Amazon and bank accounts had been hacked, her data stolen, and that as a result, her name had been tied to drug trafficking and violent crimes. They told her there were arrest warrants out for her in different states across the country. The only way to stay safe and out of trouble, the scammers told her, was to remain on the phone, keep herself isolated, and to hand over the majority of her savings for safekeeping. Of course, none of this tangled mess was true, but what is true is that Coles eventually put $50,000 cash in a shoebox and handed it to a stranger. The story lit up X, formerly known as Twitter, as users shared jokes and criticisms about a financial writer, of all people, falling for such a massive scam. But as Selena Larson pointed out in our conversation, anyone can fall for social engineering if it's tailored to them. So maybe instead of asking how could anyone fall for a scam, maybe the better question is, if it happened to them, how can I make sure it doesn't happen to me? Rosie Hughes produced this episode. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.